points. Last week, Mexican authorities blamed the death of Brad Will on the Oaxacan activist and a photographer who tried to save the American journalist's life. Will was shot during a protest on October 27, 2006, while filming a violent clash between armed civilian-clad municipal police and members of the Oaxaca People's Assembly. It was a time of mass protest and a major uprising by teachers and workers and their supporters against the entrenched corruption of the longtime PRI governor. There's clear evidence that Will was in fact killed by police and government-related officials, and that the activists did everything in their power to save the young journalist's life after he was shot down. Joining us to talk about the story's flashpoint, special correspondent John Gibler. Gibler is the author of the forthcoming Mexico Unconquered, Chronicles of Power and Revolt. He is also a Global Exchange Media Fellow and writes regularly from Mexico. John, good to have you in the studio.
It's great to be here.
Well, and just a word of explanation. You know a great deal about this case because you've been working actually as a translator, right?
Correct. I've been volunteering as the legal interpreter for the Will family, Brad's parents, Kathy and Hardy, in all of their meetings with both state and federal officials in Mexico. So I've been present both in 2007, 2008 in their meetings with the government.
All right. Take us back to 2006. Set the scene and give us a sense of what the atmospheric pressure was at the time. You were certainly doing a lot of reporting for us about what was going on.
Exactly. We've been covering the story on Flashpoints for several months when Brad was killed in late October, October 27, 2006. The first thing that's very important here is to really say quite clearly that Brad's murder was an unnecessary murder, a particularly unnecessary murder in the sense that it should never have happened. Paramilitaries had been photographed and filmed in the streets of Oaxaca killing protesters for months. We'd covered that story on Flashpoints. The story had been shown on national television in Mexico. Imagine the scenes of 40 pickup trucks with men wearing ski masks and carrying AR-15 assault rifles shooting at protesters in the street at night. Those scenes had a devastating impact in Mexico and Mexican society. The disgust at the state governor Ulysses Reese use of what seemed like, you know, a 1970s Central American dictatorship response to the teachers' uprising. The teachers' movement had been peaceful from the very beginning. They built tent cities in the downtown area, and once the governor sent the paramilitaries out, that's when they began to construct the barricades that are now famous as a social phenomenon in Oaxaca. Hundreds upon hundreds of barricades built throughout the city. That was actually the movement's commitment to peaceful protest. Instead of responding with guns to the armed paramilitaries, they responded with social organization by taking to the streets and blocking them with whatever they had at hand. In that context, on October 27th, armed men, some were police in civilian clothes, some were local city councilmen, one was a judge, they attacked a barricade in the outskirts of Oaxaca City, a municipality known as Santa Lucia del Camino. They attacked with handguns and rifles the barricade on a street named Calicanto. Brad immediately went to the scene with APO activists to film the activists' defense of the barricade, a defense with rocks. They had these bottle rockets they would kind of clumsily shoot in the general direction just to scare the paramilitaries who were trying to advance down the street and shoot at them. One thing that was very characteristic of the APO movement was that they didn't get scared easily. When the paramilitaries came out, instead of hiding under their beds, which would be a very logical response, people took to the streets, and people took to the streets in huge numbers and in an organized fashion. So on October 27th, when the paramilitaries attacked, the people took to the streets, and they pushed, just with throwing rocks and shooting bottle rockets, they pushed the paramilitaries three blocks away from that original barricade. And it was at that moment on a street known as Juarez Street where the paramilitaries were shooting at the APO protesters from behind a red dump truck, which had been parked across the street to block off the street. Several photographers were actually shot at, and one was shot before Brad was killed. Osvaldo Ramirez, was a photographer for the Mexican national daily Milenio, received a gunshot wound in the leg and was carried around the corner. The El Universal reporter, Raul Estrella, actually took the now very famous photographs where he's with the zoom lens taking a picture of a paramilitary shooting directly at him. The bullet whizzed right by his head, and that's when he said, that's enough for me, I've got my shot. He went around the corner of Juarez Street, and only moments later, Brad was shot dead and carried around the corner himself. The days immediately after the killing, no one questioned who did it, because it was so obvious. There had been national and international press there with cameras, with video cameras. They had taken photographs of the people from the Santa Lucia municipality shooting at them.
We're looking at one right here, right? Are these the culprits here?
Exactly. There's a now famous photograph which you can access. The radio listeners can go to theindependent.org, where that's spelled INDYPENDENT, independent.org. And there we've reposted some of these incredible, incredible photographs where, again, Raul Estrella from El Universal, which is a very centrist paper, by the way, it's a national paper, very kind of center political line. They published these photographs on the front page on October 28th, 2006, and all the men were clearly identified, their government positions.
We know their names, their positions.
Their names, their address.
Do we know the weapons they were holding?
The weapons they were holding. They were holding 38 revolvers. One of them had a rifle. All of this information is known, their names, their addresses, all of them are still working in the government. They haven't even lost their jobs, much less gone to jail or in any way had to be held accountable.
Well, they were initially taken into custody, but they were released because of some what?
Well, it's very funny. Actually, the state government said that they were in jail. But a friend of mine, Diego Sorno, from the Milenio newspaper, went to go interview them in jail and realized no one was there. So he published a story saying they aren't in jail. And the state government rushed to go get them and take them off to the jail
and
cell.
Put them in.
Exactly, so that they could say, no, in fact, they are. But only a few days later, the state attorney general, Lisbeth Caña, released them, saying they had carried 38 revolvers. And Brad was killed with a 9mm pistol. So the state attorney general of Oaxaca said these paramilitaries could not be his killer because they did not use the same caliber weapon. Well, anticipating, we now know 2 years later conclusively that in fact the lethal weapon used to assassinate Brad Will was a 38 revolver. The Mexican National Human Rights Commission, the international group Physicians for Human Rights, and even the Mexican federal attorney general all acknowledge now that Brad was killed with a 38 revolver. So the very gun these paramilitaries had, the very reason that the state used to justify releasing them, that is, in fact, the same caliber weapon that was used to kill Brad Will.
Wow. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Flashpoints special correspondent John Gibler. John Gibler is got a book coming out, and we're going to be celebrating that in January. The book is coming out of City Lights, and it's called, and it will be, Mexico Unconquered, Chronicles of Power and Revolt. He is also a Global Exchange Media Fellow and writes regularly from Mexico. And let's stay with the story of the men in the photograph who are now identified, whose weapons are identified. How can we characterize their relationship with the governor, with the entrenched government, which had everything to lose by these growing protests?
Very good question. Exactly when the teachers rise up and the governor of Oaxaca, Ulysses Reis, brutally represses them on June 14th, entire Oaxacan society takes to the street to support the teachers. And their movement then goes beyond the initial teacher strike to become this broad, popular Oaxaca assembly movement known as the APO. Well, an interesting phenomenon there is the very you know, traditionally, famously, you know, fractured left in Oaxaca, all of a sudden they all came together and they all acted together. And the power of that movement was that union, precisely. Well, a parallel phenomenon happened on the state government side. When Ulysses Ruiz was under threat, when it was imminently possible that a protest movement, an unarmed peaceful protest movement, would dislodge him from power, would oust him from the governor's office, then Ulysses Ruiz pulled ranks. He called on the, you know, long ruling PRI political party in Mexico, which in Oaxaca has been ruling uninterruptedly for over 80 years since the party was created. He called ranks and pulled people from local governments, local police, state police, and pretty much forced them to participate in these death squads and in these armed attacks against the protesters. So there is, you could say that Ulysses Ruiz was acting in a sense as a general in a you know, de facto state of siege, in which he called upon police, judges, city councilmen, anyone within the PR party, said, you know, grab your gun. And so these individuals in these photographs, they're all local officials and local police from Santa Lucia del Camino, which in a sense is kind of like saying in relation to Berkeley, they're from El Cerrito. You know, it's not, there's no distance between Oaxaca City and Santa Lucia, but it's just a municipal boundary issue. So you still effectively are in Oaxaca City. Technically, legally, it's the Santa Lucia municipality. So it's those local police, local city councilmen, and a judge take to the street that day in October with guns in hand and open fire on the protesters, wounding six activists, one photographer, and fatally wounding Brad Will.
All right, let's talk about what happened recently. The Mexican government, given all that we've said, indicted, what is it, nine people? All the people who tried to help Brad Will were essentially indicted. Tell us about who was indicted and how that came about.
It is an amazing display of the desperation and the patheticism, the incompetence, the exquisite incompetence of the Mexican federal government. The fact that in their attempt to at all costs cover up their official complicity in this murder, they're carrying out this murder through these local officials, that they have used all the photographs of Brad as he was being carried away from the line of fire and carried to safety to identify those people in those photographs as his killers. So as you said, precisely the people who risked their own lives to jump out into the street, to pick Brad up, to carry him around the corner, to try and give him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, to help him take off his shirt because Brad, the witnesses have told me, he was in the moments that he could still move, he was desperate to see what had just happened to him. So he started trying to lift his shirt as if to look at his own wound. And the people that rushed to his aid and tried to save his life and take him to the hospital, who were widely photographed because at that moment all the national newspaper photographers were taking pictures like wild. All these people who are in the photographs trying to save Brad's life, these are the ones the federal government has just identified as being his killers.
And his camera kept filming as it fell, right?
Exactly. And that video has been used by an independent video forensics analyst as well as the Mexican National Human Rights Commission to disprove the impossible and absurd claims of the Mexican federal government that his killers were the people standing next to him.
How was it used? What did it show?
Precisely, the Mexican National Human Rights Commission has done a sound analysis to identify the sound of the fatal shot and then the first moment that the high-definition camera starts to blur. So that's the time elapsed between the shot being fired, the sound traveling, of course, right, to the camera microphone, and then the bullet traveling to hit Brad's chest and make him fall. Since it's a high-definition camera which records each frame within, you know, hundredths of a millisecond, the Mexican Human Rights Commission has been able to gauge an approximate distance that the bullet would have traveled, knowing that it was a 38 caliber bullet, studying the weight of those caliber bullets, the kinds of handguns used to fire them, and through a comparative analysis of these different kinds of handguns with the same caliber bullet, they came up with a distance of between 35 and 50 meters, which is about over 100 feet.
Now, let me tell you, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with John Gibler about the killing of independent journalist, U.S. journalist from New York City, Brad Will, 2 years ago in Oaxaca, Mexico, during a time of great uprising and organizing against the entrenched government. Before I ask you about the response of the Will family, let me ask you a little bit more, John, about the people by name who were, in fact, indicted. How many? Are they in jail now? What are they saying?
There are 9 people for whom the federal government has issued arrest warrants. Only one has been detained and is in jail, Juan Manuel Martinez. These were all people who are participating in the APO movement. Some were teachers, one was a doctor, one was a student, one was a member of an indigenous rights organization. One, however, is a photographer, Gustavo Vilchis, was documenting the Oaxaca conflict for the local Mexican Human Rights League, a nonprofit organization based in Oaxaca that did an amazing job and very risky job of documenting human rights abuses during the 2006 conflict. Gustavo Vilchis was working as a volunteer photographer for the Human Rights League at that moment, and he was around the corner as a group of people carried Brad to Arboles Street from Juarez Street. He knew Brad. Gustavo knew Brad. They hung out a lot. They were both photographers, Brad with the video camera, Gustavo with the still camera, and he rushed to his aid. He tried to give him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and then helped carry him to a Volkswagen Beetle that was used to try and take him off to the hospital. Gustavo, it turns out, is actually in the United States right now. He is participating in a book tour, a book called Teaching Rebellion, which has just been published by PM Press here out of Oakland. That book is an amazing collection of testimonies of people who directly participated in the Oaxaca movement, as well as photographs. A large number of Gustavo's photographs, as well as his testimony, are in that book. So he is here in the United States touring with this book when he finds out he has an arrest warrant, a federally issued arrest warrant issued for him back in Mexico.
And what's his crime? Is it conspiracy to commit
murder? He is being charged with conspiracy to cover up murder. So they're charging Juan Manuel with being the gunman, the man who pulled the trigger, and they're charging everyone else who tried to help Brad, who tried to carry him, who tried to give him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, who are in the press photographs trying to help him. All those people are the ones they're charging with conspiracy to cover up the murder.
Wow. Now, what has been the response? I know it's been strong from the family of Brad Will regarding the Mexican government's attempt to broadbrush these 9 and protect, obviously, officials of its own government.
They think it's insulting. They're completely appalled. They've told me repeatedly in conversations over the past few days that they're completely appalled, because not only is the federal government not carrying out its basic responsibility of ensuring justice, not only is the government not investigating in a serious, impartial manner the death of their son, but they are actually going after the people who tried to save him. And not only that, but they're forcing Brad's parents, his own family, to defend innocent people that the government is trying to charge. So now the Will family is not just, you know, a family suffering through something unimaginable, the murder of their loved one, the murder of their son, their brother. But now they're having to become lawyers. They're having to become defense attorneys to defend the very people who tried to save their family member's life from another injustice. So they say it's insulting. They tried to work with the Mexican government. I was at the meeting. The first meeting was 12 hours long in Oaxaca back in March 2007, when both Kathy and Hardy finally felt, you know, thank goodness the federal government is going to take over this case and the corrupt state government is going to have nothing to do with it. And they believed, and they wanted to believe. Of course, they wanted to believe.
Is it his parents?
His parents, Brad's parents. They wanted to believe in the integrity of the Mexican federal government. Well, sadly, a year and a half later, they have learned to lose that belief. The Mexican federal government is participating actively in the cover-up of the real culprits of Brad's murder. They are planning to take a very strong role in putting social pressure from the United States. The Merida Initiative, which is a package, it's kind of a Plan Mexico, a package of $1.4 billion in military and police aid from the United States government to the Mexican government, that bill was signed into law on July 1st with a condition that the State Department of the United States produce a report within 3 months concerning Brad Will's murder investigation. Well, the 3 months have long since passed, and the murder investigation has long since collapsed. And the Will family, they're telling me that they are going to pressure Congress, including their local congressman, a Republican who wrote a very strong letter supporting them and demanding a serious investigation, actually calling for Congress to hold all of the military aid, to freeze those funds and not give them to the Mexican government until justice is done.
Well, I'm not sure that's going to happen, because you could sort of call this free trade aid. They need a military structure to impose lots of different aspects of border activity. That's a whole another subject, but I guess this does... Well, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to, John.
Sounds good.
And I know you must have thought about this, but we spoke to you about another situation, which I think happened in San Salvador de Atenco, in which an activist was shot through
Correct.
The head. And I believe we interviewed you in the van on the way to the hospital.
Correct.
Right? Where the guy ultimately died. And he was a victim of Mexican government authorities, right?
Correct.
You know where I'm going with this?
I can imagine.
You know what I'm saying? We're in jeopardy here. Journalists are in jeopardy. I mean, is this action, is it effective? Did they kill Brad Will and indict these nine so that they can restrain, undermine this kind of uprising again? What should we take in terms of precedent?
You know, I was speaking with Gustavo, the photographer who tried to help Brad, who tried to save his life. He gave him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and then carried him off to the Volkswagen where they tried to get him to the hospital. And he was telling me, you know, he noticed in that moment he was the only person with a camera who was doing something. There was this line, and there's actually a photograph of all the national newspaper photographers and the international photographers just staring dumbstruck at Brad on the ground bleeding to death. At that same moment, Gustavo was holding Brad's head in his hand and trying to save his life. And he kind of had this just flash moment that he really only became consciously aware of later, right? In retrospect, thinking about that moment, that he was aware, like, I'm jeopardizing myself by being here. Like, all the other guys with the cameras, they're all standing over there watching. Most of them not even taking pictures anymore because they're so, you know, struck by what's happening and the gravity of what's happening, the intensity of what's happening. But Gustavo's like, you know, that's something that in a moment's notice, it's either you pull yourself out or you jump in. You know, you stand in solidarity with someone who's on the ground, with someone who's been struck. And he doesn't regret it, and neither do I.
So you get into that van, which I believe we spoke to you on the way to the hospital. Did you get in that van as a reporter or as a human rights activist?
As a human being, you know? I mean, as someone who's not going to stand around and watch someone bleed to death.
But you could be, in the context of what happened here, indicted for murder, right? You could be accused of the death of somebody who you were hoping wouldn't die.
Very unlikely at this point. But really, at that moment, it doesn't matter.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We are really... we owe a lot to you, John, and we certainly don't pay you to be out there. But we owe you a lot in the kind of reporting that you were there in both of these cases. Very soon after this shooting and in the other one, you were there on the scene, giving people a sense of what life is like if you're a protester, if you're a real activist in Mexico. Of course, this case, and I guess we should spend the remaining couple of minutes, and I could talk a lot more with you about a lot of the different things that you're covering, but this certainly opens up an angle, so we can zoom in and take a look at the level and nature of corruption in Mexico, and this sort of opens up the gravity, the impact, essentially it's a corrupt top to bottom criminal justice system.
Absolutely. The Brad Will case in this sense is very unique because in all of the other assassinations, some 23 people were assassinated just in the Oaxaca 2006 conflict. There's not a single other murder that's being investigated by the Oaxaca state government or the Mexican federal government. The Oaxacans who were shot in cold blood in their peaceful uprising, their murders are not being investigated. They apparently don't consist of crimes. For the Mexican government, I think they're going through the motions rather pathetically with this investigation in Brad's case because he was a foreign national, because he's a United States citizen, and the Mexican government feels some amount of pressure from the United States government to produce, in their case, an incredibly shoddy and insulting fabricated investigation. But because they've gone through the motions to investigate, because they haven't actually investigated, they have made an incredible series of mistakes and blunders that offer us a vehicle for analyzing how impunity works in Mexico, and precisely through what I think is a kind of ritual incompetence, an incompetence that is done on purpose, that is crafted over time. So in the case of Brad's case, no one went to the crime scene until 4 days after the murder. No one preserved the crime scene. The caliber of bullet was misidentified. The autopsy was not finished. No one from either the state or federal government interrogated the men who were photographed shooting that day. No one carried out an investigation to form a list or make a list of all the different people photographed shooting guns that day. And a series of incredible blunders. Anyone who's watched one of these television programs that are popular these days, what are they called?
CSI,
Yeah, CSI.
Crimes.
Anybody who's watched one of those would then look at the insulting and kind of not even junior high homework assignment level PowerPoints that the Mexican government has produced in Brad's case and realize that there's been no real investigation. That offers us, as I say, a kind of a tool for analysis of how they create impunity, right? How impunity is something crafted through a kind of purposeful incompetence. But impunity is also for the people in Oaxaca who've been assassinated, it doesn't even warrant an investigation in the first place. As I said, none of the other murders in 2006 have been investigated. Another case, which we've mentioned here in Flashpoints, the two indigenous radio hosts, the Triqui women radio hosts, Felicitas and Teresa from Oaxaca, who were gunned down with AK-47s on the highway back in April 7 of this year, 2008. There's no investigation in their murder. They were gunned down on the street, and I interviewed the man who was driving their car. He saw the people who shot them. He gave me their names. He identified them. No federal or state investigator even went to take his testimony. A local human rights organization had to take him from the hospital because he had been wounded with several AK-47 bullets to force the state government to record his testimony. And yet, there's no investigation. No one's been sent to jail, of course, because whereas the Mexican government, especially the, as they say in Mexico, and I quote, spurious President Felipe Calderon, end quote, he is obsessed with this concept of the rule of law. But there is no rule of law. The rule of law is a kind of ideological device meant to construct a fantasy of democracy that does not actually exist. Mexico is a society crafted around the rule of impunity.
One prisoner at Rikers Island once told me the rule of law is a legal excuse to lie.
About right.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We've been speaking with John Gibler, and we just have a couple minutes left, John. And I guess let me just jump a little here and ask you to take a couple of minutes to say what you think the big stories are. What are the implications, say, of this story for further uprisings? Are people intimidated? Or will we expect to see more Oaxacas? Say a little bit more about the situation now.
I definitely think we expect to see more Oaxacas. And they're brewing right now as we speak. The character of protest in Mexico is very distinct from that in the United States. And one of the reasons I think is because Mexico, is the book title you mentioned says, has not been fully conquered yet. There is a deep anti-imperial, anti-colonial stance to everyday protest in Mexico, such that a teacher's strike, when it is attacked, becomes a six-month-long takeover of a state capital. Imagine, let's just have a thought experiment, right, that, you know, there is a homeless protest against homelessness in San Francisco. The police brutally repress that protest. Tens of thousands of people take to the street, beat the police back, and take over San Francisco, stringing tents across Market Street. And they're, you know, in their tent encampment, you know, playing guitars and reading newspapers and getting into political discussions. And imagine that organizing tool. That's what happened in Mexico. I mean, well, not only that, then they go and take over the state television station. Then they go over and take over all the radio stations. Of course, they wouldn't have to take over KPFA because it's already by the people.
we're working on that.
Yeah.
But the point is well taken, and all your points are well taken. John Gibler has helped us out as a special correspondent on Flashpoints. He's got a book coming out in January. We're going to celebrate that with him. We want to know more about that in the coming weeks and months. The book, the forthcoming book, which is coming out from City Lights in January, is called Mexico Unconquered, Chronicles of Power and Revolt. He is a global Exchange Media Fellow, and he writes a lot about Mexico. Thanks a lot, John.
Thank you very much, Dennis.